trying to get back to the basics of great products.
Power comes from sharing information.
I try to convince people to slow down.
Free. Yeah. Open.
This is the Soak Tyson Podcast.
Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to the Soaked by Slush podcast. This is Isak Rautio here. Next to me is sitting William van der Balen.
We have a great guest here with us.
CEO of Masterclass, founder of Masterclass. David, how do you pronounce your last name?
Rogier.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Welcome. Where's that from? Where's that
name
from?
French.
French, yeah.
Yeah, great to have you here.
Thank you. Awesome. I'm excited to be here.
Thanks for coming. Let's just start with for those who don't know what Masterclass is, I reckon there's not that many people anymore, but, you know, just in case.
We always have room for more people to sign up. Masterclass, the idea was, can we make it possible for everybody in the world to learn from the best? So it's online classes that are taught by masters. For example, you can learn filmmaking from Martin Scorsese, how to shoot a basketball from Steph Curry, how to sing from Christina Aguilera. So it's the best in the world, and they're coming to teach online. And for $180 a year, you get access to all the classes.
We're doing a podcast in Finland, and we started out with, like, if it's not even close the same scale of guests, but, like, domestically pretty damn good guests, I'd say. And we started out with, like, getting the mayor of Helsinki, which is kind of a good validation. But
yeah,
then,
that's awesome.
Yeah, that's very nice. But I'm just wondering, like, because those names, every one of those is, like, next level, like, the highest of the high you can get. How do you start out by getting, like, who and how?
Yeah, it was really hard. I mean, it probably took a year. I mean, I was cold emailing, I was cold calling. Everybody said it was impossible. Everybody said stop. But I thought you can always start with the best and then start to bring on people that are less well-known but still great.
Right.
But you can't go the other way. So you guys started with the mayor, right? So then somebody else was like, okay, well, I'll be on the same podcast as that person. But if you started with, like, me, the mayor was not going to want to come on the podcast, right? So I think there's an art to kind of start at the top. And then, you know, just to really convince those people to do it, you have to figure out what is it that they actually want, right? And for the people who we went after, they wanted to teach. Like, there was somebody in their life who changed their life, who was a mentor, a teacher. And so this was opportunity for them to be that same thing kind of at scale. So you have to figure out what is needed of that person. And the other thing you have to figure out is, usually there's somebody else you have to convince too. If it's an agent, a PR person. And so you have to figure out, how do you make sure that it's going to be good for them too? So it's going to be good for their brand, for a PR person. For the mayor, he probably wants just it to be in front of young people. So you guys have a podcast for young people or whatever it is, right? Yeah. You have to figure out what things are going to appeal to them and their team.
What we've seen is that once you get a few big names, then life tends to get
totally
a bit easier.
Yeah.
So you had the same effect. Who was the first kind of big name you nailed?
Yeah, so the first three were kind of at the same time. Dustin Hoffman, Serena Williams, and James Patterson.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
It's pretty modest.
Yeah.
You know?
Just, like, texted them, like, you want to come, and then...
I wish it was that easy. I did not have any of their phone numbers. Yeah. No. Yeah. I mean, it was a year of grinding and hustle.
And since then, it's been quite... you know, upward trend for you guys. It's going well, it seems.
Yeah, it's going great. I mean, we now say no to 9 out of 10 people. We've raised $135 million. We have 200 employees. I mean, it's just grown way bigger than I ever thought it would.
And what's kind of your... Do you have kind of an end vision, end game? Where do you want to take the company? What's the journey? Do you know yet?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, this is like a dream job. So I would love to do it for as long as I can. I mean, I'd love to IPO and be huge and be in every home in the world. My dream would be somebody took a class who otherwise would have never had access to these people and then becomes a master themselves and they come and teach. Probably have to wait a little bit of time for that to happen, but that would be my dream. Yeah.
What's the sort of philosophy behind the whole thing? Like, where did it start from, and what's the idea behind this? Because, I mean, this is, people are learning from the internet more and more all the time, and sort of knowledge is getting democratized. What is your thought behind this? Ideas?
I have a lot. I think for our parents' generation, there were career tracks and stable jobs you had for your entire life, or if you wanted to be this job, it was a very clear path. for our generation, that's not true anymore. And so as a result, I think our generation has decided to own that we're going to have to learn. That we're going to have to learn. And to learn is going to be part of who we are, and we're going to have to constantly grow. And so the education system isn't designed for that. The education system is designed, you like go up until the age of 18 or 21 or whatever, and then that lasts you for your entire life, which is clearly not true anymore. And so there has to be ways that you can constantly learn and grow. And if it's going to be part of your life, you want to enjoy it. So I think there's this myth that like education, entertainment, or another side of the spectrum, when why can't education also be entertaining? And it's because school beats that out of us. And so one of the fundamental ideas is that education can be entertaining. You're going to constantly have to grow. So we're going to make it really fun and interesting to want to learn. Which I think is what school should be like.
Yeah, and it's weird how people, I agree with you that people think this, like it should be serious, but then whenever you hear stories about, they were a good teacher, like that was the best class I had back in high school, those were the fun teachers.
Exactly.
The one who made it interesting with their own sort of twist.
Yeah, and it wasn't necessarily always the easy ones.
No.
It was the ones who made it interesting, right? In fact, your best teachers, if you think back, probably weren't the ones who just like, I don't care, whatever, everybody gets an A. It was ones that try to push you a little bit, right? It didn't give you work that was meaningless, right? And so that's what we try to do.
Yeah. Do you have any visions with like that would be crazy. Now I'm thinking this is not even possible anymore, but like one-on-one sort of can you sort of make these like holograms of like
some deepfake
kind of stuff that give you feedback and stuff? Like, are you visioning stuff like this at some point?
I think what we'll do before that is like a deepfake class from like Napoleon,
yeah,
or like Abraham Lincoln or something
crazy.
Like that. I think we'll do that first. Just
how to invade Britain.
Yeah.
To look for modern life.
I'm not sure how big the market is for that, right. I think that's a great use of the deep fake technology.
Right.
I think it'll be too obvious if you do a fake one-on-one. And also, this doesn't replace one-on-one. Like, if you want to learn how to cook, you should still cook, and you should still have another chef to taste your food. But this is a chance for you to hear from the best chefs who you would otherwise never had a chance to hear from.
What would you say is kind of the ratio between you being inspirational and purely technical? Because, as you said, you need to, you know, try out in real life, but you also need to be inspired.
Yeah, it's probably a third inspiration, a third practical, and a third is wisdom. It's things that will change how you look at something in your life, how you hear something in your life, but isn't about, you know, we will never have a class on the new version of Excel, because that's like if you're going to talk to Hans Zimmer, you don't want him to teach you the intro steps of playing a piano. Like, you want to hear how he thinks of story and composes things. So we are trying to get stuff that lasts forever. When you teach a new version of Excel, that's only going to last you for a year or two until the next version comes out.
How long can you, or like, how, if I, let's say, want to learn to cook with, is Gordon Ramsay you have on the masterclass
right
now?
He is one of the chefs we have, yeah.
One of the chefs, yeah. So yeah. How, what can I expect sort of to get out of it? I'm not probably going to be Gordon Ramsay after that class, but he's going to give his sort of own touch. Like, how far does the course go?
Yeah. So Chef Ramsay has two full classes.
Yeah.
You're going to learn how to make the best eggs that you've ever made. It's really good.
Yeah.
And then you're also going to learn, his approach, which is like, so I don't know if you know this, but he wanted to be a professional athlete and a football player with soccer, and he got hurt. And so his career was ruined, and his parents helped him sign up for a catering school. And he realized, wow, I actually love this. And he went, okay, look, I'm going to go find the best chefs in the world, and I don't care how much they pay me. I don't care how much crap work I have to do, but I'm just going to do it. And he did it for years and years, and like, he realized that's how he was going to become the best, was he was going to learn from the best, and he didn't care about how much money he was going to earn, what the job title was. And I think that's a lesson that you can apply to everything, right? I think your first few years in your career, it's about to maximize how much you're going to learn, and not caring about how much you earn.
Yeah. What was your early career like? What did you do before masterclass?
So I thought I wanted to run for political office.
Yeah.
So I got some internships in the States working for people in office, politicians. And I realized that most people there aren't interested in helping the world. They're interested in power, which is much less interesting to me. So I tried to get a job in business if I can use a business to solve a problem, it'll be a solution that lasts for much longer. Yeah. And it was really hard to get a job in business because everybody was like, you should go work in politics. But then I got some jobs. Then I went to Stanford for my MBA, went and worked in venture capital, investing in startups, all just trying to learn. And after about a year of investing, I realized I didn't like it. And I went to my boss and I was like, hey, like, this isn't for me. I want to build something. And he said, what? And I said, I don't know. And he gave me $400,000 and he told me to go think of an idea.
Okay.
Damn. It trusted you.
Yeah. Crazy and
he's
really
probably
huge.
He's pretty happy right now with that decision.
I hope so. I hope so. Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah.
What do you, as this whole idea about sort of democratizing knowledge and people learning from the internet,
yeah,
independently is very interesting. And I mean, we're both young. I mean, you're young also, and you're gonna see this evolve during your lifetime a lot, and you're
it already is evolving.
Yeah. Do you think at some point in the future it might in the U.S. if I'm correct, sort of college degrees, there's starting to be an oversaturation in some areas and some fields even. Do you think this sort of you might be getting to a point where you can actually have validated sort of certificates or something in whatever form it takes in the future to sort of show that I've acquired these skills or this knowledge from the internet or from like independent research?
I think so. I don't think it's there yet because there isn't like a trusted brand to test your skills except in some very trade kind of craft. So if you're like, you know, in IT support, there are some standard ones. Most certificates online aren't well-known or trusted brands. I think what you'll see first, and you already start seeing it, is a change in how class in a physical school is taught. So Khan Academy?
Yeah.
It's a charity started in the States. They basically teach classes online for free for school kids. One of the things that's starting to drive, which I think you'll see more of, it flips what you do in the classroom. So all of a sudden, instead of going to school and hearing a lecture from a school teacher, you'll watch that at home, and then when you go to school, you'll start to do exercises. And I think you'll see the flipping in the classroom about that. But then I hope you'll start to see that a school, how do I say this? People will be smarter and more informed about what school actually helps them. There's still a lot of schools, especially in the States, and a lot of degrees that financially are bad decisions. And I think the more transparency we have there, I think that's good for the world.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. In Finland, we have like basically free education.
You guys have one of the best educations.
Yeah, we're one of the best, and it's free. Yeah. And even here, we are debating this, that, you know, the relevance of schools and the relevance of this system. But it has to be an even bigger problem in the States, where it's basically ruining people just to go to school, and then the degree might be obsolete in 10 years. Or as you said, it at least has a pretty clear due date when you need to update yourself. So do you see that, you know, if we take, you know, enough time, that schools will they have a role in the future, like a centralized school system? Do you think it will exist?
I absolutely think so. I just think they'll change. From the school teacher seeing their job to just to share facts with you, because now the facts are on the web, so to teach you how to understand and think. I think you'll always have schools. I think internet online will play much more of a role in democratizing access, because it's unfair that money in the States buys you the best education, right, versus how hard you work, right, or how much you care. But let me ask a question to both of you.
Yeah.
You guys live in a country with, hands down, the best education system in the world. Why do you think it's so effective?
Here? I don't know. I think from the lower classes, which is, I think, where this sort of, it's highlighted, where it's very good, like elementary school even. I think it's a big part. There's many, many, many sort of aspects to it. But like from my own experience, I think there's this realization of letting kids be kids in a sense. Like you're not putting too much sort of unnecessary standardized pressure on a little kid at a young age where your brain is forming, you're forming social skills, you're exploring, you're learning about the most basic, most fundamental things in the world for the first time ever. And it's stressful for the first, I mean, and make it, but make it fun.
Cause so are there less, so how do you guys put less pressure? Are there not exams? Are there not grades? Yeah, how do you think that?
There are grades, but I mean, even the grading system is not that sort of harsh in the beginning, but like there's more time for kids to hang out with each other.
Because I mean, I'm afraid the school systems now aren't reacting. I think one of the most important things schools need to do right now is teach people how to think and how to synthesize, process, and filter information. It used to be that the job of school teacher was to share with you what the facts were and you wrote down everything they said. Now the internet's provided that. So they have to teach you what, how to realize what's true, what's not, how to think through things. Because otherwise, I mean, depending on what sites you go to on the web, you will not believe the same things are happening in the world.
Yeah.
Right? And so you need to be able to learn how to think through that, right, and process
yeah.
it.
Yeah, like the it's weird how the sort of educational system is kind of coming full circle, because liberal arts originally was there to sort of give people the ability to be a civilized citizen and be able to contribute in conversations, be able to sort of be in the zeitgeist, be in the times. And now as times are changing, yes, exactly as you said, like these general tools of thought and expression and like just being able to navigate through life, it's going to be much more important.
Exactly. That has been the ideal all the time, but we kind of got lost in between and started specializing just way too much and we're not waking up to that.
I mean, look, I totally agree. I also think it's... if you think about like the push for engineering and learn how to code and program, like I think there's, you can argue there's way too much of a push on that. You can also argue that has lifted tons of people out of low income and helped
Absolutely.
Them have great jobs.
Not everyone is as privileged as us. We
are. Yeah. And so I think it's this mix of trade, craft, and how to think.
Exactly. Right. I agree. If we switch the discussion a bit and maybe talking about your business model and subscription business models in general. Yeah, I'm sure you do. Why do you think they are so successful and what is it? What's so compelling to people and why did it all of a sudden just, you know, explode? Or it seems like it was all of a sudden it became so popular.
I think a couple reasons. One is, I'd argue that it's not new, but it has exploded. And it used to be with your phone service or your TV service or something like that, or your your power. And so consumers, how do I say this? Why I like them is they align your interest as a company 100% with the consumer, because every month or every year, whatever your cycle is or renewal, the customer is asked again, does this provide value? Is this worth it? And so when I have the team trying to hone in on retention rates and getting the most amount of people to return back, it's aligned interest with the with our customer, which says, hey, look, I want more content, right? I want to explore more of it. I want more of this. It aligns us 100%. So I really like it. Because it's not just trying to say, hey, I want you to pay a lot, and then like I'm never going to talk to you again, right? I think why other companies like it, which I don't think is good, so like gyms are like this often, is people are used to just signing up and then never thinking about it again, and so they constantly pay. So like this is why gyms want you to sign up for a package of like years, or the phone company for years, cable providers, because they don't want you to have to rethink about that question. I think you want them to rethink it because that makes you a great business.
Yeah.
And we're the sort of LimeWire generation of like free data and everything. Like even data that takes time and effort and money to produce, then somehow kids of my generation, I mean, I'll admit, like I had LimeWire when I was a kid, like you sort of somehow feel entitled to it. And now that we're adults and we're sort of realized the work that goes into this, I think there's this sort of disdain and this sort of regret and sort of wish to contribute and wish to sort of keep this system.
Yeah, that's a really interesting phenomenon, because I agree with you. I was with Napster in the States, it was a big one at the time. And I don't know if as a society or as the industry did a very good job of making you feel bad to use it, making you a little bit anxious to use it. But I think the best argument is if you do that, you aren't supporting the artists, right? Because, and then they can't make more stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you're not entitled to whatever took this person years and years to produce.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is a cultural thing.
Right.
Other parts of the world do not believe that. Right. Yeah. So this is a cultural ethic.
Do you see this kind of when also signing up users that it's, of course, it's going to be easier in some countries, but have you been surprised that it's been, you know, harder or easier in some countries to get users to sign up?
I'm surprised how many international users we have. About a third of our business is international users. The classes are right now are only in English. So, like, surprised at how much are coming from abroad. We have been starting to experiment internationally. We're going more and more. So that will become a larger part of the business.
Yeah. And yeah.
You probably have a better question.
Like, but how do you think about user acquisition and like, that's something probably you invest heavily in, and I mean, I see your ads basically every day. Yeah. In my Instagram stories.
Sorry about that.
They're well produced, and it's relevant. So for once, it actually works. But how do you think about user acquisition? What's some of the things you've learned during the years?
There's this myth, and you see it like online all the time on tweets and blog posts, that early stage startups should not use paid ads on Facebook or Instagram or YouTube. I think that is disingenuous, because Facebook and Google are one of the only ways for a startup to get scale quickly. I mean, if you look at there are like 8 sites that 80% of the world goes to, and if you aren't one of those, how are you going to get in front of people? Now, I think the part where it's right is you shouldn't burn money on that. So for us, our rule was always, hey, whenever we run an ad, we're going to make money off that ad. So I don't want to like buy growth, right? And so I think there's a responsible way to do it. But I think it is very hard in this day and age for most tech companies to get any foothold without doing some sort of paid ads. My advice is just make sure that you're like not losing money, cash on it. And then of course you should invest and develop in other ways to be able to get people to hear about you. But I think, you know, you have to build something great, and then you have to figure out how people are going to hear about it. And you can't, if you just build something great, that isn't enough. You have to do both.
Yeah, but it's still the most efficient way to get customers.
Incredibly efficient. Yeah. Facebook has become one of the places people spend the most money to buy ads. That isn't an accident, right? They're very effective at it.
What are some skills or habits or knowledge you've gained from the classes you've made that you don't use in your own life?
That's a great question. So I stutter. It was much worse when I was a kid. We did a class with Samuel L. Jackson. He also stutters, which I didn't know.
Really?
Yeah, and he uses curse words to when he's like to help fill it out.
By the way, you can curse in this podcast. Don't worry. Okay. Yeah.
So he uses like the word like fuck a lot to that. So that was something personal. I think, but Hans Zimmer's class changed how I hear music. Hans Zimmer starts his class with basically saying every note either asks a question or answers a question. And when I heard him say that, I was like, what kind of crap is that? And then he starts showing you examples of like, this is a nice question, this is a sketchy question. And you're like, oh my God, I can hear that. And it totally changed how I hear music. I think another one, Aaron Sorkin. Do you guys know Aaron Sorkin?
I love this writer.
Yeah, screenwriter. And so one of the things he realizes, or he sees, is words to him have rhythm and are musical. And so he loves the sound or the rhythm of somebody using somebody else's words back at them. And you'll see it in a lot of his films, he does this. So in the Facebook movie he did with the Winklevoss twins, are saying that they are the inventors of Facebook, and the Mark Zuckerberg character says, if you were the inventor of Facebook, you would be the inventor of Facebook, right? And he's like using their like words right back at them, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
How much do you engage directly with the people who produce your content? I mean, you said it's the best job in the world, so you probably meet
with
these
our instructors.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, we now have a team that makes the classes, so they're much better than I am. But yeah, I mean, I still get to work with some of the instructors, but you know, now we have a team that have won Oscars and Emmys and are much better at this than I am.
I mean, yeah, your production level is just off the charts. The ones I've seen, it's like watching, Oscar nominated movie. It's just, I think that's probably, have you seen, do you think that contributes to your success as well?
Oh, 100%. I think it does a couple things. One, it helped us early on to get other instructors because they knew they were going to be portrayed in a stunning way and it was going to do right by their legacy. Two is, it doesn't feel like school. It feels as a consumer that like, all right, looks just like a movie or a TV show I love. Like I can relax and enjoy it. So it has both those effects. We also want the classes to last forever. So we film at a really we film as good as we can afford and it's high quality so that it'll last forever or last as long as it can.
Have you heard any stories of anyone sort of making it in a way or choosing their own path differently because of a master class?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple examples. We did a class with Dead Mouse. Do you guys know Dead Mouse? The EDM artist. So Dead, I get a call from, his name's Joel. I get a call from Joel one day and he's like, some people in this class are really fucking good. So he wanted to organize something, so we organized something. And he picked one of his students, signed him to his record label, and he's now the opening act for his shows.
No way.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, but he does that kind of stuff, doesn't he? Because he's got this one guy he found on Twitter, does vocals for one of his tracks.
That's awesome. It's not in the contract at all. And this happens multiple times. We did James Patterson, the author.
Yeah.
He picked two people and co-wrote books with them. I mean, this is stuff not in the contracts with them. I mean, this is just their ideas.
Wow.
That's
awesome.
It probably happens a lot more also.
I mean, we get people notes all the time. It's really nice. Like, I won this award because of what I learned from this class. Yeah. I mean, it's really great. I think the most interesting ones or the coolest ones to me is it's not an obvious link. So somebody wrote, she sent us a note the other day. She took the astronaut class with Chris Hadfield, and his love of space inspired her to finish her book, and who isn't anything but do about space, and she finished it and just won some awards, right? So,
yeah, I mean, it's great, and I just feel like after this, I just need to go home and watch a masterclass again. Yeah.
You should. Yeah. We just released a class with Bob Iger, the CEO of Walt Disney. That class is awesome. If you guys haven't, the people listening, he's, I think, one of the best executives in the world right now. He plays chess. I mean, just with his moves. I mean, it is a fascinating class.
I think I have to go check that out.
Yeah.
Definitely. Thanks so much for this.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
It was great to have you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Cool.
And thanks for the listeners, and thanks, William.
Thanks. All right.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed your visit to that conversation as much as we did. Now, if you want to stay updated and keep in touch with us, please subscribe to us on YouTube, follow us on Spotify, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, and all other podcast platforms. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, and then Facebook. You guessed it, Soaked by Slush. Thank you, people, for listening. Bye-bye.